Wessex LMCs, supporting you and your practice.
Hi, and welcome to another Wessex LMCs podcast. With me, Zoe Tobin, nurse advisor here at Wessex LMCs. And I'm kindly joined today by Emma Ray, who's a respiratory nurse specialist and a clinical practice educator for children and young people with asthma in Hampshire and Isle of Wight. That's a bit of a mouthful. Yes. I'll hand over to Emma just to introduce yourself, give us a little bit of background about yourself.
So I've been a nurse for 25 years now. I've worked in various different areas, including secondary care and intensive care, respiratory research for a number of years at the University Hospital Southampton, working on asthma and COPD trials. Most of those were based in the hospital, but we also did some trials in the community as well. This led me to have an interest in working in primary care, and I moved into primary care a few years ago now as a respiratory nurse specialist. And I've worked in a number of different GP practices, but I've also kept a foot in with the respiratory world as well, sorry, the research world as well. So I'm still involved with research. But at the moment, yes, I'm a clinical practice educator working with the paediatric team at the University Hospital Southampton. So that's with Professor Gary Connett, who's the clinical lead for paediatric asthma in our area. And I'm also a respiratory nurse specialist in the GP practice, just one day a week, and that's in Southampton. That's a really interesting post. We've got lots of different people from lots of different backgrounds who come into our GP practice. So it's been a really good experience for me. I do have really high interest in working with children and young people with asthma, hence I moved into my current educator post because I really enjoyed working with children. So I think at the moment I've got a good mix.
Fabulous. Thank you, Emma. And that's what we're focusing on today, aren't we? The sort of paediatric respiratory side of things, and hopefully building people's confidence with that in general practice. We were talking before the podcast, weren't we, about we feel that it's suggestive that there's clinical nurses out there that are respiratory trained that potentially I'm not too sure about stepping over into the paediatric side of things, whether there's a little bit of worry there, a bit of caution. So I was hoping that actually we could have a little chat today about what that is like for you, and how do you find that? Is it something we could provide as an effective service in primary care, training, that kind of thing, Emma?
Yeah, well, definitely. So, I mean, I've got an adult nurse background, so I'm not a paediatric nurse at all. So when I moved into primary care and suddenly I was having to see children, it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. And I was very concerned at the time, thinking, you know, I don't really have the skills to look after these children effectively. The way you communicate with children can be slightly different as well. And then there's pressure from the parents getting that right. So I was quite stressed and felt concerned about getting it right. At that time, what I did was I found myself a paediatric asthma course to try and develop my skills further, to give me that confidence. So that was really helpful, and that was through Education for Health, and there's lots of other providers who provide paediatric asthma training. But actually just seeing those patients, having that experience, has really sort of improve my competence and my confidence with children. And actually, it's kind of ended up being the best part of the job. So I really enjoy working with children. You know, they're generally really fun. They tell you funny stories. And even the teenagers, who can be quite challenging, you can really make a difference with those people. You know, even if you just listen to them, sometimes they've got, you know, some mental health problems. You might be the only person who could be available to listen to them at that period of time, and that could be affecting their breathing as well. So, yeah, I really, really enjoy working with children, and actually can make quite a big difference to childhood asthma if you know what you're doing. And it's fairly straightforward, actually, to sort of look after children with asthma. You just need to know what the tools are. And that's what we've been developing across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. So I know this podcast goes out to other areas as well. So wherever you are in your area, there'll be somebody similar to me, maybe not an educator. So I know in Wiltshire, it's the consultant. One of the consultants actually is the asthma lead for the county. So different places are doing it slightly differently. But if you do need help and support in your area, there is help and support there. So do look out for people like me, because I'm very keen to help people in our area.
Perfect. No, and actually, we'll try and try our best to see if we can figure out who those key people are in the different areas, so we can signpost. But that's fantastic. Your area is very lucky to have you.
Thank you. Well, I hope so.
and so your role as an educator. So just talk a little bit like that. So what do you offer, sort of practices in your area?
Yeah, so I've only been in post since last August, but I work with a team of paediatricians and paediatric respiratory nurses at Southampton General. So as a team, they've developed some fantastic resources to share with primary care and secondary care providers who are looking after children and young people with asthma. So we've developed a diagnostic pathway for our area. That includes Wessex. They'll be going through the peer guidelines shortly. And there's a Wessex asthma formulary for the 6 to 11 year olds and the 12 plus groups as well. So all of these tools will be available on the Healthier Together website for Hampshire, Isle of Wight and Dorset. I know there are Healthier Together websites for other areas. So wherever you are in your area, do look out for those resources, because there'll be something similar. Every area does something differently. But most of my job at the moment has been attending meetings. So there's local primary care respiratory society meetings. I've been going to target meetings as well, so delivering education there. And a large part of our stream of work is around diagnostics. So as we know, the ICBs are heavily pushing for spirometry to be made available for people with asthma and COPD. A lot of the ICBs have concentrated this piece of work on adult care, but we still need to be thinking about offering diagnostic tests to children as well. So I've been offering services to GP practices and PCNs to go out and help train them up and feel more confident in delivering spirometry with children. So I've been out to a group of GP practices in Andover recently. They've got a really good hub in the middle of the town, which I was really impressed with. I've seen another nurse there separately. We did a little training session with her. So, and in the Andover hub, I actually saw some patients, which was nice. So it was really good to sort of demonstrate how to deliver spirometry in children effectively. And interestingly, we had one patient who was really good at it, and she was 10 years old. And then there was a little boy, he was really funny. He was a complete character. And he did really, really well, but we didn't quite get it. So it was really good for the staff to see, you know, sometimes it's really straightforward, but sometimes you've got challenges. And that's the sort of name of the game, really. You know, even if you're doing spirometry with adults, ultimately it might not work very well, but we need to be offering it to people. And you know, if it doesn't work the first time, we can always get them back in. So that's been really good. I've been enjoying going out to practices. I've been out to a few practices in Southampton as well. So it sort of really depends on what the staff want, so what the practices want, the PCNs, the different groups of people. So it's not just about working with nurses and what I'm working with pharmacists as well, and the GPs. So they're really important, because the GPs would be the first point of contact for those patients coming into primary care. So if we get that sort of piece of work right in the first place, and the children and young people are put on the right course of treatment in the first place, then it's going to be a lot easier for us to follow up with them afterwards as respiratory nurses and practice nurses and pharmacists. So there's lots of work those are the main strands that we're doing at the moment in primary care.
Perfect. And you mentioned there about, you know, spirometry not being always successful. And I've had a go at it as an adult, and I've got nothing wrong as far as I'm aware of my lungs, but I just couldn't do it. So I'm really impressed that obviously children can do that, and it can be successful. What sort of age is it kind of reasonable to undertake things like spirometry in children? Is there like a sort of cut off on age?
So I was working in the respiratory clinic a couple of weeks ago, and there's a 4-year-old who they were doing spirometry on, and she was absolutely amazing. She got it first time. So I think as long as you make it fun, it's a game, and don't, you know, make it as simple as you can. It is really achievable, but it's the way you address the child. And it's just those little top tips that can really help. But like you say, an adult can really struggle with it. I mean, I've done spirometry in very elderly patients, and, you know, it can cause a lot of discomfort and pain. And there's lots of considerations around spirometry. It's very, really important for diagnostics, and it's something that needs to be offered, but it is another tool in the toolkit as well. So wherever you're working, so people listening to this, do look at your diagnostic pathways and make sure you're following them. So in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, I know that, so I've, you know, been speaking with lots of different practices. People don't feel particularly confident in doing spirometry in children. Some people have declined to want to do it at all. So I think it's just, we're going to try and build up some confidence and let people know that, you know, I can come out and help them to try and improve that process so that they, you know, just to give them the tools and the confidence to do it in the future. But, you know, if you don't have somebody like me in your locality, then, you know, speak to your local hospital. You might be able to go in and watch some spirometry in children as well. That might be useful. Other practices in your PCN, they might be doing spirometry in children. So, you know, connect with those people and go and have a look. It is a very similar procedure to doing it in an adult anyway. It's not that dissimilar. There are some caveats. But you won't be able to go far wrong, particularly if you've got your ARTP adult certificate with your spirometry pediatric certificate. If you've only got the adult certificate, then you'll have to do like a bolt-on certificate if that's what you want to do. And the ARTP certificate isn't mandatory yet, but it might be in the future. But the ARTP at the moment would say it isn't mandated. It's just a recommendation, but obviously it's if you've got the certificate, it sort of just demonstrates that you've met a certain standard, so which is reassuring to patients and any bodies that come in to sort of review quality in your GP practice.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So as you mentioned, there's some areas that don't have someone like yourself, Emma, and they've got there is the options, obviously, of going to the local trust or like you say, look at PCNs or wherever there's a hub somewhere that they can go and, you know, shadow there. Do you think that's another thing that would put people off getting that bolt-on qualification if they've not got the clear clinical supervision after they've done the training? So like I said, for your practices in Hampshire, it's fantastic that you can obviously go out and support them with the practical element. Bit more tricky potentially for areas that don't have you, and they can do the training, but then it's getting someone to sort of supervise them afterwards.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think if you're you know, I came across a lady last week in a small GP practice in Southampton. So she'd got her ARTP qualification pre-pandemic, but actually a lot has changed since then. And, you know, we brought in said schools and things like this, you know. She'd sort of come across it, but she hadn't really embraced it. So I think particularly if you're a person who could be lone working, I could see that could be really challenging. So there are primary care respiratory society do have a network, do join that. That's really important. That's a really good way of touching base with other people. They do have groups across the region as well. So there's one down in Portsmouth, there's one in Southampton, which, you know, the Wiltshire people are very welcome along to. I'm not aware of one in Wiltshire or Somerset, but I suspect there is one in Somerset. But there's probably lots of people in your area who are in a similar position. So just explore those networks. We can share the Primary Care Respiratory Society details with you if you don't have it. But they've got like an interactive map where you can find all the different respiratory groups in your area. So it's a really good way of sort of networking with your colleagues across the patch. They run education sessions and training. So last week, Southampton City Airways Forum had a meeting. There was a discussion about the Clean Air Champions project for Southampton. The asthma guidelines for Wessex were discussed. And there's a respiratory project aimed at education was discussed as well. And in fact, that might be good for some of your people who are listening. There's a respiratory education project in Southampton, but anybody can participate in it. So we can share the details with your members at another time if you like.
No, that would be fab. That's great. And what would you say if there are nurses out there that would like to develop their respiratory skills further? What should they look at and how should they go about that?
Yeah, so there's lots of resources out there. Obviously, there is, as I mentioned, the Primary Care Respiratory Society. Mm-hmm. So that's a really good resource for anybody with a respiratory interest. They've got there's lots of GPs involved with that, pharmacists, physiotherapists and nurses. They have a really good conference in September up in Telford. So they provide lots of training and education. They've got respiratory masterclasses that they deliver as well. There's a respiratory leadership course that you can go on with them. There's loads of different things. Really, it's a really good organisation to be a member of. There is a paid membership fee, but it's definitely worth the money. You get a newsletter every couple of weeks with all the new updates on it. So they talk about national and international updates and new initiatives. It's really, really valuable. Thinking about pediatrics, there is a pediatric respiratory group called NPRANG. We can send the details out for that as well. But they have a regular conference every year as well, which is good. So if you've got pediatric interest, that would probably be a good one for you to be involved with. And they send out regular newsletters as well. And there is a the Association of Respiratory Nurses. They've got a really good conference, and then they as well send out lots of new updates and details. The Association of Respiratory Nurses is not just for primary care, so it's for secondary care nurses as well. So if you do go along to their conference, they could be talking about severe asthma and bronchiectasis clinics and things like that. But there's also a big primary care presence there as well. And obviously you've got your BTS, your British Thoracic Society meetings. They're really good. There's a summer meeting. I think that's up in Manchester this year. And they have a winter meeting in London, which is quite scientific, I would say. But your Primary Care Respiratory Society meeting is probably your best one if you've got an interest in all things respiratory and you work in primary care, definitely.
That's lots of really good resources, Emma. And like I said, I'll get the details off you and share that with the blurb that comes with the podcast, if that's okay. That's fantastic. What sort of opportunities are there for GP practice nurses in the respiratory field in terms of role development, that kind of thing?
For me, So I come across lots of respiratory nurses who are really developing their services and becoming leaders in their primary care networks and across the region. So a bit like myself. I mean, I wasn't a practice nurse, but a lot of practice nurses end up being the respiratory nurse specialist. They may not call themselves that, but they are actually the respiratory nurse specialist in their GP practice. So they do have a leadership role there, and they generally are really well respected by the rest of the team. But there's some really good examples of where respiratory nurse teams supported by, you know, your GP colleagues and your pharmacy colleagues are developing respiratory hubs, so that there's a flow of those patients from the point of diagnosis through to chronic disease management, where the services are really well developed, and they're using research in their practice as well, and lots of new initiatives. But yeah, there's loads of new posts that are coming up, a bit like the one I'm in now, so my educator post, because I've had experience of working in primary care. The educator post sits quite well with that because I've got that experience of working in primary care, to understand, you know, the difficulties that primary care faces. But, you know, there's lots of different respiratory groups as well. So if you didn't want to stay in primary care specifically, there are respiratory groups. You know, you've got your pulmonary rehab teams, your COPD teams that are based in the community as well. So there's lots of different options, definitely.
Yeah. And what is it that you enjoy about working in primary care specifically, Emma? You mentioned there's challenges, clearly, but what is it that you enjoy about that?
Yeah, well, I guess it's about making a difference. So I think particularly with asthma, you can make a difference quite quickly. You may see a patient that day, well, you probably see several patients who may have poorly controlled asthma and they don't actually realise that's the case until you explain it to them. So I would always say to a patient with asthma, you know, you should expect to have no symptoms, because the asthma treatment these days is really, really good. So we do have amazing asthma treatment, and people really shouldn't be putting up with having symptoms. So I try and instill this in them. And then, you know, when you get them to take their inhaler properly, make sure they're taking it, you know, as they should do, or you change their inhaler to something that really works for them. So obviously we've got the new Symbicort reliever therapy that's really good. And, you know, your MART regimes that have been around for a while, but are really effective. So if you put them on a really good regime, they're doing everything you want them to, and they come back a different person, and, you know, their quality of life has improved 100%. You get really good feedback, and that's really lovely. You know that you've really helped somebody. It makes you feel good about yourself, doesn't it, ultimately? If you're working with children, you know, if you can make a massive difference to their lives, you know, they're going to have a better quality of life. They're going to be able to go to school properly. The parents are going to be less stressed, and, you know, they'll be able to go to work, not having days off work to look after their children. So, yeah, it's brilliant, really. And, you know, some amazing teams out there in primary care. And I do think primary care gets a bit of a battering, but they're the workhorses of the NHS, really. And they need to be congratulated on all the work that they do. It's just amazing. And if we can help them sort of improve some of their systems and the way they work, then all the better. But we're very, very lucky. You know, we've got what we've got in this country. And yeah, primary care is a brilliant place to work, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. So if people want to get in touch after listening to this podcast, they've got any questions or, you know, that they potentially want to, could they direct them to you directly, or would you be happy to share contact information, Emma?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, if you want to email me, it's emma.ray@uhs.nhs.uk. That'd be absolutely fine, and I can send you any details or updates. That's fine.
Perfect. Thank you, Emma. And as I said, we'll share all of the sort of resources, links that you've mentioned. We'll share all of that as well, and your contact details again. That's fabulous.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Emma. And I think there's it's an area that we could discuss in depth, really. And perhaps in the future we could look at doing more specific areas in respiratory and having a chat about those. But thank you for your time today. That's much appreciated.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Emma. And that concludes another podcast. Thank you.
Wessex LMCs, supporting you and your practice.